In 1977, I arrived as a freshman from California at Yale University, and I was captivated by the Gothic architecture and the sense of tradition, and I was enthralled by all of the undergraduate theater opportunities, and I was mystified by the social order. Now, this was a campus where there were no fraternities or sororities. It was just discrete social pockets. You had the students who had all gone to East Coast boarding schools, and the students who were pre-med, and the students who might be into the arts. But at the top of the pyramid were students who were in a cappella singing groups. And they were more popular than football players. They were more popular than the popular kids. It made no sense to me that this absolutely archaic tradition was carried on like nobody had gotten the memo that it was the late 70s, and we had Springsteen and the Sex Pistols and even disco, because the crowds would part like the waters before Moses when 12 guys in tuxes suddenly went a tomb, 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 tomb. And they would have all the attention, and they would have all the girls. And if I sound a little bitter, I am, because they wouldn't have me. I mean, as skeptical as I was not immune to a cappella mania, which was sweeping the campus for the first 3 weeks, and everybody was trying out for these groups, and I was no different. I tried out for the Dukesmen and the Alley Cats, and I'd walk in, and they had me sing scales and sing a solo, and they slapped me on the back and told me I was a great guy, and then on tap night, they just passed me right over. But they did not pass over my three roommates, Kevin, Rem, and Russo. Kevin was the all-American kid from Cleveland, Ohio, and he sang like a young Sinatra. And Rem was Remsen Meserol Kinney IV. You know, a Massachusetts blue blood with a voice like a Tibetan bell. And Russo was this jubilant Italian kid from Brooklyn. He had a first name. Nobody used it. He was just Russo. He was a force of nature, and he would go barreling into social situations, and you'd kind of cringe and look between your fingers, and somehow he would just turn them in his direction, you know, based on his high spirits. Russo arrived at Yale straight from Catholic school. He announced to everybody that he was a virgin, and he had never had a drink, and he'd never smoked pot, and that's how he was going through the next 4 years. By sophomore year, he had broken all three of those vows in spectacular fashion. Well, they were great roommates. We used to have raucous evenings, sitting around, getting high, arguing, making each other laugh, blasting David Bowie and Pink Floyd, until Kevin would get very pensive and hushed, and he would raise the question, what's going to happen senior year? Because senior year, they would have the opportunity to become whiffenpoofs. Now, it's hard to say that word with a straight face, let alone with the gravitas that it commanded, because the whiffenpoofs were royalty at Yale. This was a serious 100-year tradition. These guys would get up in front of a room and go, "We are poor little lambs who have lost our way. Bah, bah, bah." And grown men would start weeping. And the whiffenpoofs were like the all-star team. They drew the best from all the other groups, who were like the AA and AAA ball clubs, just feeding the show. And at the end of junior year would be Whiff and Poof Tap Night. And that was an evening that was just fraught and tense, as, you know, the 14 best singers would be chosen and 20 others would have their hearts broken. This is not a story about Whiff and Poof Tap Night. I'll cut to the chase. My three guys all made it. So now I was rooming with three whiffenpoofs. I was like the DJ who got to hang out with the Beatles for a whole weekend. And we had a huge celebration and rode the train down to New York and eventually, you know, washed up in Brooklyn at Russo's house where we would sleep it off. And the next day, I'm sitting there at the dinner table next to Russo's father, Mr. Russo. And he was a first-generation Italian from the old country. And I'm sitting there wagging my tail because I have this thing. I was raised on too many old movies. And I get around somebody with a foreign accent, and I think that they have some indigenous pearl of wisdom that they're going to drop on me that's going to change my life and, you know, sort of bring my lurking Jimmy Stewart out, and I'll you know, do something right for the common man and, you know, just turn things around. So, you know, I kept leaning in and beaming at Mr. Russo, just expecting in any minute he was going to go, "Mike, you Mike? You know, the longer you go in the life, the shorter you're going to..." You know, and I don't know where he was going to take it. It was going to, like, have weights and measurements and, you know, ethics and morals and, you know, maybe a parable about a donkey. And, you know, it would blow my mind and, you know, I would go charging on back to school. But he was kind of tired and cranky. And when he talked, it was mainly to scold Russo's younger brother and say things like, "We got butter right here." So, you know, I didn't get what I was looking for. That was okay. We headed on back to school. Senior year comes, and now it's time for the coronation of the new Whiffenpoofs. It's the Whiffenpoof concert early in the year. It's held in the, you know, the beautiful 150-year-old auditorium. We all buy tickets. We want to see Kevin and Rem and Russo do their thing. Sadly, the opening acts are a cappella singing groups. You know, I mean, it's like nothing really blends with a cappella singing. I mean, they didn't bring out a jazz trio or stand-up comedy. We got the double-A singing group and the triple-A singing group, and then it was intermission. And the guys that I was with, they said, "Why don't we go to the men's room and smoke a joint?" Which seemed like a good idea because it was a lot of a cappella singing. So, you know, we go in there, and somebody hands it to me, and I take this massive hit, and as I do, one of them says, "Mike, how long were you..." The question doesn't matter. He said my name, and suddenly there was a hand tapping me on the shoulder, and attached to that hand was an elderly gentleman. "Mike, you Mike?" It was Mr. Russo. And I wasn't just a deer caught in headlights. I was a stoned deer caught in headlights, which is really skittish. And I am not a graceful person, but the slickest maneuver that I ever did was to hand off the joint behind my back, blow smoke in one direction, and then take the force of that exhalation and turn it into a greeting. So it sounded like, "Hi, Mr. Russo." And then we sort of looked at each other, and I got that goofy, expectant smile on my face because maybe now was the time for the pearl of wisdom. And if he had gone, "That's a bad for your brain," you know, I would have sworn it off right then and there, and my inner Jimmy Stewart would have come out, "You're darn right, Mr. Russo, I'm going to run for Congress," you know, or something like that. But Mr. Russo was going through his own stuff right then. You know, this was a man who had been a prisoner of war during World War II, and then he'd come to America and started a life in Brooklyn and worked in construction for decades and made a hard scrabble, first-generation Italian. He's about to watch his oldest son come out on stage and go, "A tomb, 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 ba, ba, ba." And that had to be weird. You know, plus there was Russo's friend acting pretty strange in the men's room, so he just patted me on the arm and went, "Yeah, good boy," and walked out. And that was it. You know, I had been caught red-handed. I was ready for the lecture. I was ready for the life lesson. And I got, "Yeah, good boy." I would be stoned for the next 15 years.